Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. We're excited to share our love for some of our favorite stories, and in this episode, we'll be discussing the new limited series, Queen Charlotte, a Bridgerton story, which dropped into your Netflix feeds last week.
We're returning into all the high drama of royals, lords, and ladies of Regency England. Our returning listeners will know that we're cousins who started this podcast because we love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've covered His Dark Materials, The Witcher, Avatar, The Last Airbender, Lovecraft Country, and we've loved every moment of it. But we also love to talk about and learn from historical dramas. So we thought we'd bring some of those conversations to our audience too. Last year, we released episodes on Bridgerton, The Gilded Age, Downton Abbey, and The Crown, and of course, Outlander. We loved it. So much fun.
On this episode, we're discussing the ups and downs of all six episodes of Queen Charlotte. So if you haven't finished the series, proceed with caution. There will be spoilers for the entire show. We'll discuss a few of the plot points, the major revelations, and how we think this prequel will impact the future of the series.
Dearest gentle listeners, did you miss us? Questions abound about whether there will be adult content. Since we have more self-awareness than Lord Danbury assessing his value to the king, you will not have sorrows, tears. There will be adult content. Let's go.
So we'll do a brief summary of what happened in this Bridgerton spinoff. So in 1761, 17-year-old Charlotte of House Mecklenburg-Strelitz, I think I said that.
Yeah, you got it. Wow, I was worried for a minute. That was tough. Well done.
In what is now modern-day Germany, is quickly betrothed and married to the King of England, who is charming, but elusive. In response to Queen Charlotte joining the royal family, the king's mother, Princess Augusta, declares that, you know, all of the wealthy people of color will be risen and join the peerage.
To come up.
Including a young Agatha Danbury, who is also appointed to be a lady-in-waiting to Her Majesty. But when her husband dies, Agatha and the others who receive these titles wonder, will they be allowed to keep them? The newlyweds really struggle. King George abandons Charlotte almost immediately and leaves her at Buckingham House to stay in his house in Kew. After many weeks, she demands that he returns, and the two have a frosty and somehow yet steamy... I was really confused. I was like, are they mad at each other or what's going on?
I don't want to fight. I want to fight. Like, this is the best.
And then they proceed to use every other day, the even days, to attempt to make an heir.
The odds and the evens, it was throwing me off. It's an even day. I was like, okay.
Charlotte learns that the king suffers from mental illness. When he experiences an episode, he withdraws and is treated by a doctor, John Monroe, who routinely tortures the king in the name of curing him. Eventually, at Charlotte's insistence, he returns home and they throw a ball to show all of society that he is well. The ball is an astounding success.
In 1814, tragedy strikes the monarchy. The Princess Royal Charlotte Augusta, Queen Charlotte's only legitimate granddaughter, dies in childbirth. The queen springs into action, demanding that her unmarried children marry and produce an heir as soon as possible. She's feeling the heat from Lady Whistledown. She's giving her all kinds of problems in the press. It's really not easy.
Can we just take a beat here and talk about how many of her sons have mistresses and are just out here doing the most?
Yo.
Like, I don't, there's 50 illegitimate children.
Each one of them looks like they fell out of a brothel. Like, each one of them, they are shabby, like, for sure.
I think my favorite moment in this whole show was when she was like, I've got virgins to one side and horns to the other.
It was good. It was great.
Imagine saying such a thing about your own children.
Oh, so great. Oh, my
God. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine. Are you kidding me? Meanwhile, with her two eldest children happily married, Violet Bridgerton, the Dowager Viscountess, has come to feel that she might be ready for some lovely, lovely relations. Her garden is blooming. Lady Danbury reflects on her own marriage and on the illicit relationship that she had with Violet's father. Wow. And it made her feel alive, and her garden was also in bloom. By the end of the series, Prince Edward and his wife, Princess Victoria, tell the Queen they're expecting. An excited Charlotte goes to tell George. And what is a beautiful scene. Like, I really love the way they shot this scene. And it's a callback to an earlier moment when they're under the bed. And we'll talk about it more. But it's really great. And he's in the throes of his mental illness. And she finds a way to be able to get him to understand what's going on and that his line will continue. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, it was really moving. What'd you think about the show?
I loved it. I didn't think I was going to love it as much as I did. I actually liked that it was a little bit... I actually liked that it wasn't as cheery as Bridgerton can sometimes be. It had its cheery moments. Like, we laughed a bunch about, you know, sorrows, tears. Oh my gosh, it's so good. But there were some funny moments. But it was also like, you know, there was some stuff that I think had layers of things that they were trying to address that we'll get to, you know, everything from race, class, the way we look at, you know, mothers and, you know, women that are like not like younger women. Like they talked about a lot of stuff there and mental health. I think it was there was a lot of things that they tried to peel back. And I particularly loved the shade at House of the Dragon. I particularly loved it about being able to have breech babies in that time period. It was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I was really excited for this show. I've been excited since they announced it. But then when I started it, I felt concerned right away because the first episode is kind of sad. Mm-hmm. And I was a little bit worried that it was going to be kind of too heavy. But it was a heavy show in a lot of regards, but they did have those moments of levity and they finally addressed some of the questions that we've had as people who enjoy the show. Were they ever going to address the question of race? How are they going to really deal with mm-hmm. it? I think you and I had a conversation last week mm-hmm. saying that, like, alluding to it the way they have been vaguely has not been good mm-hmm. enough. Like, we wanted something more. So in the end, I really enjoyed it. Like, by the end, I was thoroughly attached to Charlotte and George and young Lady Danbury, who I think has also been kind of an elusive character. Mm-hmm. But it was nice to see them give us more depth to a number of characters who have mostly just played a role in the younger generation story. Mm-hmm. So I liked it a lot. I've seen some reviews that say this is their best show, like, in the Bridgerton world yet. I still think season two is my favorite, but this was very good. It certainly for me ranks above season one.
Well, I think why I get why they're saying that, even though I would tend to agree with you. Like, I think, like, what I would agree with you about, well, like, how I rank them as well. But I do like this one a little bit more than season one. And I get why they're saying it, just because I think that, you know, it's one of those stories where it adds color to a world that we're already familiar with in a way mm-hmm. that doesn't make you feel like, oh, this is just another Bridgerton story where, like, you know, we got to figure out how they're going to get together. They take that away from the beginning. They're together. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it is. Like, mm-hmm. it's not about how they're going to be together. It's like, and who's going to be with who. It's literally like, okay, they're together. This is what it is. And there's another kind of challenge to it that's like, kind of unknown to one character for a long time. Like, what's the challenge? I don't understand. And I think, like, the way that they did that, I kind of didn't love the episode where they go back and show us the whole story from George's perspective in the beginning, but as it progressed into the episode, I thought, okay, you know what? That was smart, because it colored in a lot of information that we didn't have. So I really like, I understand why they say that, even though I probably wouldn't say it's the best. I would probably go season two, season this one, and then season one last. Like that, oddly enough, even though it was the first.
Yeah, one. That episode that you're referencing, there's a lot of moments in the show that made me think about Hamilton, but that episode that you're referencing kind of just reminded me like how well Hamilton manages to mm-hmm. give the same story by another point of view in the song Satisfied. Mm-hmm. That was my least favorite episode.
Me too. Yeah, mine.
I thought there was a more clever way of telling that part of the story. But that said, six episodes, one episode that I didn't love, I thoroughly blew through all the other ones. When they were over, I was like, wait, that's it? There's not more? Like, they were all really well done. That was the only one that I was kind of like, okay, we saw all of this.
That was exactly what I said. I said that out loud. I was like, why are you guys doing this? We saw this all. I don't understand. And I get they were trying to show, but I almost feel like they could have shown those other parts about what happened to him and why he was away without having to show all the other parts that we had already seen. Mm-hmm. You know, that would have been more interesting to me. But yeah, I do actually love that. It just made me understand the queen in a way that I didn't understand her in any of the other two seasons as to why she is the way she is. Some of the quirkiness, some of the like kind of like coldness, some of the reason why she is like kind of like so interested in other people's relationships and finding love. There was some real like layers of depth and like even like more context to like Lady Danbury and Violet's relationship, like that I was like, yeah. Wow, this is cool, you know?
Totally. I also think it, one thing I've always been curious about is the Queen's substance abuse issues and why they're not really noted very much in the show. Mm-hmm. And I think most people know what's happened to the queen here, especially since we know now that it in the Bridgerton timeline, the king is still the king, but there's a prince regent. Mm-hmm. So everyone knows the king is not fit to leave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought that was all fascinating.
I wonder why she doesn't try to like, you know, marry off her sons and her daughters like during, like she's super active and everybody else is like, you know, naming them. I would be, listen, with all those children, I would be naming all of them like the what is it? The bell of the season or whatever?
Well, her daughters are beyond that age, yeah. Right? Her daughters are all like in their late 30s, 40s. So I think that like, we're missing piece of the story, which is what did she do in the preceding 20 years, right? There's a big gap here.
Well, I think that's purposeful because I don't think this is going to be the last version of Queen Charlotte, depending on how they do, like that we'll see. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that they just do one season of this. I think they'll do another one.
I'm curious to see. I'm not sure. I would love to see what happens after this, but before, like, I think a good way to do it was give us Violet's first season.
Yeah.
You know, give us a show that is Violet coming out, meeting Viscount Bridgerton, Daphne and Eloise's and Antony's father. Like, give us that and then maybe you can fill in some of the blanks. I'm not sure I want a full another season of just the of Queen Charlotte's story.
No, maybe I think you're right. I think it has to have, I think like you'll have to have some other like main plot line like that. And that would make sense. Like, you know, and even like, there's even like the storyline that they can throw in there of the jewel that left, right? The mom, like, remember that was the whole thing that happened in season two, right? There was like one that was named like the jewel of the season that left. Mm-hmm. And then why that happened and yada yada, like there's some storylines we could get backstory to. I mean, some of those stories have already been kind of fleshed out, but it would be cool to see the Bridgerton, like the original Bridgerton love story in a Queen Charlotte like prequel type vibe.
Yeah, you know? I think they might be setting us up for that.
Yeah,
I'm curious about it. I haven't looked into what other spinoffs might be in plans, but I would be totally down to see young Charlotte come out for the first time. She clearly, even in her adulthood, knows very little about, you know, being with anyone aside from her husband. And also a lot of it made just seeing things through Violet's eyes for once. I understood why Daphne was so ill-prepared.
Yeah.
In season one, I was like, oh, I get it now. So I think that they're kind of priming us for Violet to have her own plot line, which I love.
I do too.
Because one of my biggest complaints about Downton Abbey was that Cora, you know, the Countess of Grantham, never had really her own stories. Her stories were almost entirely about her daughter.
Yeah, I love that they're doing this for Violet. And I think it's like the focus on like women beyond their youth in this story is really great. You know what I mean? Like I really love that that they're, you know, it was super fun to like make the joke about like my garden is in bloom, because it was the way they were talking about it was like, it was like really, the way she tried to describe it was hilarious, the way that they wrote that. But it was just also like really like a good break from like what we've talked about before, like the period pieces, the marriage plot, like the devices used. Like it was good to see like a little bit of a break from that and kind of like going to something different. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also think it's an acknowledgement that a lot of the people who watch and love this show are women who are no longer in their 20s and have children of their own. And so I thought that part of it was really nicely done, because we know a little bit more about Violet because we did in season two see how she reacted to her husband dying, and just, you know, I think we just know her a little bit more. She's had some great scenes with her son and daughter, who were the focus of the previous two seasons. However, Lady Danbury has always been an enigma to me.
Yeah.
I've always wondered, like, who is this lady and why does she have so much power in the ton?
Yeah.
Why is she so well respected? Well, like, where does her money come from? Like, all of that has made me, you know, I've always wondered, like, what is going on with this character and why won't we get more explanation? And I think that they use this show to give us more about her. I'd still love to see more.
Me too.
I'd love to see, you know, it seems like her husband's estate is in shambles. I'd love to see how she came back from that, because money is clearly no issue for her right now.
Yeah, she doesn't have any. She doesn't have money issues. It was really interesting to hear her tell, you know, the princess that she was like, yeah, I don't. It's not the money that I'm coming here talking about. I have no shortage of money. Like I'm trying to figure out like class and status and like title. You know what I mean? Like. And that was like her main focus. It was her focus and then became her focus again, like after her husband died. But yeah, I loved this aspect of the story. I love that, like, most of the time, and you know, that's because I think Shonda Rhimes is just, I mean, shout out to her. She's really good at writing this stuff, but and her team of writing it. But I really love that this, the thing that was different about this and this depiction of these women, even though we knew them surface level, was especially as the older characters, it was the first time that we've seen them, you know, not just as the mother or the aunt or whatever. It was like, oh, here are people who have their own desires and they're sexual beings in their own right. They are thinking about these things too, and love and being together and, like, you know, and lust and all those things. And like, it was just, it rounded out their humanity in a way that I thought was really, really valuable, you know?
So. Yeah. And I think it also, I think you and I talked a little bit when we covered season two of Bridgerton, about like the relative privilege of the Bridgerton family, and how they're not always aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can, all of the Bridgerton children can be a little bit like, woe is me, even when they're talking to someone whose situation is much worse than theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And I could finally understand what it, like, why that is. These other characters around them have struggled in a way that the show never really let us see before. Like, Lady Danbury has to be more standoffish, right? She has to be more dignified. the queen has been carrying the weight of the entire monarchy. You know, but to Violet, you know, love is this beautiful thing and you can have a wonderful, because she had a wonderful marriage, because she grew up in a happy home. You know, she hasn't really seen the other side of that, and clearly nor have her children.
Yeah, 100%.
Those kids can be really wild sometimes. I'm just like, why? Like, you do not have the worst situation in the world. Calm down.
Well, they seem to have, skipped over her dad's, like Violet's dad's vibes, and went right to grandma's vibes. Like, grandma's vibes.
I mean, they're not, I think they mean well, but I think the house, like the family Bridgerton sometimes forgets how easy they've had it compared to other people, including their neighbors, the Featheringtons, their, you know, probably the Hastings, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the Duke of Hastings the Duke of Hastings is the second Duke of Hastings.
Yeah, his pops was up in there like, yo, title. What's going to happen to our titles? Like, let's get this sorted out, you know?
What happens when... Are they even sure what happens when the next king comes in? Because, like, at this point in the regular storyline in the 18 teens, like, George is still the king. Mm-hmm. Charlotte is still the queen. Are they so sure about, you know, George the Fourth? So there's all these things that I think that they introduced as new possibilities, but also kind of just explain some of the anxiety that some of these other characters seem to have that I never really understood.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that we didn't understand that's like front and center right away, even in the first carriage ride, when they're going to the wedding ceremony, is something we've always talked about, is colorblind casting. But this, is it so colorblind? Like, this whole, a lot of the plot is based around this, like, you know, change in society where Black people were given titles and, you know, the queen is actually Black. So this is an interesting wrinkle as to how the society that we meet in season one came to be. And Bridgerton, which has really addressed the issue of race, is really leaning in the prequel. What did you think of that?
I mean, I think that it's, I like this explanation.
Yeah.
Right. Because they alluded to it, right? Mm-hmm. In season one, the late Duke of Hastings talks about this, how Queen Charlotte, how the king married a Black queen, and that elevated other people. And so I think that they kind of alluded to this to explain, this society that didn't exist really, right? Mm-hmm. This integrated society where Black people could be servants, but also could be peers, and also were like part of the aristocracy, respected members of the ton. Mm-hmm. So I liked the explanation, but I have a lot of problems with it. Mm. So for one, this explanation is saying that all this happened in one generation, essentially.
Yeah.
I don't buy that the relative integrated society that we are treated to in seasons one and two would exist in that quick time. That said, my point of view is an American perspective. So I'm only thinking about the history of this country, right?
But it didn't Maybe just it happen in like possible. one generation. It happened in one integration ball. They just had a ball at the Dansbury's and it was like, yes, let's go. And it was like, yes, this whole generation, as George said, everything, do you realize what you've done to shift all of society? And I was like, just one ball, really?
Right. Exactly. And it makes you wonder, like, season one, the Duke of Hastings is by far the most eligible bachelor. Mm-hmm. And all the mamas want their daughters to marry the Duke of Hastings. Would that have happened in this relatively short time? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily buy that. But I do like that they address the issue of race directly. They left a lot on the table, so there could be more to come. Mm-hmm. But they didn't shy away from it the way they usually have. And And, you know, this like integrated society is not part of the book world. And so Shonda Rhimes had to write this herself. Like, she had to come up with this concept on her own. And I think she did a fairly good job. And I also liked that it wasn't like this painstaking political process. The princess was like, okay, so we're going to make this work. And we'll just elevate some brown people. And we will have some of them join her court. And it will be an experiment. And the crown says it's right, so it must be right. I liked that they did it in that kind of quick way. So we didn't have to go through like parliament debating it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, 100%.
But I did have some issues with it.
And she wasn't like their first choice, right? Like, she was like, it just happened that they made the choice and were like, we're not going to give him a chance to back out of it. Because it sounds like he had found ways as the king to like wiggle out of other betrothals. You know what I mean? Like, so they did. And so, and you know, pictures, as you saw with the paintings, she was in there talking about make her skin lighter. So like, paintings could have been misleading when they looked at the person back then too. So you just don't know. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of reasons why this could have that she left open in the writing of this to kind of like make it be like this would have been a split second decision once they met her. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah, I liked it. I liked that too, because it also presented Princess Augusta as being very smart and savvy. Mm-hmm. Of just quickly making a choice that was ultimately successful, as we can see in later seasons, and in making a decision to integrate society quickly, not incrementally. This is just how it's going to be from now on. Mm-hmm. So it's not quite believable, but I do think that in this world, how they have it set up, they didn't have a lot of options to explain this. And so this was a pretty good one.
Yeah, I agree. And they also explained, like, I guess they kind of made it work a little bit too by implying that the African people of African descent that were in England were also from wealthy African nations and were like educated at the same schools as some of these other people. Mm-hmm. So they made mm-hmm. it seem like this is not such a, and they used like good exposition with Violet, like, hey, this is not such a big jump. Like, Lord Danbury went to school with dad, you know what I mean? Like, kind of thing. So there was a lot of good scaffolding around it too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
I totally agree. They kind of explained it in a way where if this had happened in 18th century England, this is probably how it would have happened. Mm-hmm. So I liked that. I do struggle with the fact that the slave trade did not come up.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, England was a very big part of the transatlantic slave trade. The fact that it's not really referenced, especially since George is the king who ultimately puts an end to England's role in it. Mm-hmm. Not entirely, but he tried. And so I found that to be a little bit irritating, because it's also like in all those discussions that Lord Danbury had with his wife about the king realizing how important, like, it never came up, like, but they're also doing this horrible thing.
Yeah. No, agreed.
Yeah, so I just, that part I kind of struggled with. But again, I think there's always, one thing I've always seen with Shonda Rhimes shows is she always leaves a lot you can kind of quibble with, but you can, it's sort of like take it or leave it. Like, this is what they presented us with. I wish they would have at least mentioned the fact that England was involved in transatlantic slavery, but who knows? Maybe we'll get that in another season.
Yeah, and I agree. No, I totally agree. And I think like that's what I do love about her writing. It leads you to like kind of like add things in. I agree also wholeheartedly that not making any reference of it, especially since they do make reference of there being like issues in the colonies. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And this was kind of part of what, like you said, George started thinking about the role of Britain in slavery because of the issues in the colonies and other things. So there were some things that they don't touch on at all, which, you know, he was kind of occupied, you know, falling in love and trying to avoid his bride and the whole thing. But at the same time.
Right. And also, like, this show tried to do a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So in here, there were some moments where there were clearly things that, like, Shonda Rhimes wanted us to think about in terms of the role of Black women, mm-hmm. right? And how Lady Danbury is out here making moves and her husband is essentially thinking that the fruits of her labor are basically just because he's so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even like, shushes her. Like, how are you going to shush her? Like, what are you talking? Oh, this guy was the worst.
And so I think there were there. I think the show was very ambitious. It did was trying to do a lot, and most of it nailed. So I have to note that like some of the stuff around the racial stuff, while I'm glad it was addressed, it didn't all hit. Some of it I was like, huh, this is strange.
Yeah, and I did love that for what it lacked in certain areas, it did really explore the impact of like oppression to someone's self-esteem. And, mm-hmm. you know, it did really, I do love that Charlotte is kind of oblivious until Lady Danbury tells her, like, why do you not see us? Like, why do you not see what we're going through? Like, your walls are too high. And then what a great way to tell, like, you know, it was bold. I mean, she's still the queen. You know what I mean? Even though you're one of her ladies, like she's like still like, you know, and you don't, they're not that deep into their relationship yet. And I think it was the right level of chance that she had to take to like you said, show like Lady Danbury, like really feeling out something that we've spoken about in earlier episodes of how to use what we may refer to as soft power. It may not be like out here making decrees and laws, but she used like similar to when we've talked about Sansa and Cersei and all these folks, like, but it's no less effective. She's still doing a lot of heavy lifting to move forward, like the plight of her family, herself, and the society at whole.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
really cool.
I did find it interesting that she had this brief moment where she no longer cared about the society pool when her husband had died and it became clear that she wasn't sure if she could keep the title, her son could keep the title, and her, like, there was a moment that I thought was a little bit strange.
Her garden was in bloom. What did you want her to do? Like, she was like, finally, she didn't have to deal with this. Finally, this motherfucker pamooked out. Like, he finally caught that pamook. Went out like Mr. Pamook, like he was the when he dropped back and he was just like on the floor. Like, I was like, yo, her level of celebration where the lady's maid was even like, it happened. She's like, it happened. And then the scene that they put on is absolutely amazing. It was,
the scene was awesome. I was like, wow, they pre-planned this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They ran through what exactly they were gonna do when it eventually happened. Impressive.
The only thing that was bad about that scene is that probably was the best day of his life. He went out like that, the king came to and the queen came to his house. And this motherfucker didn't deserve a day that splendid. Like, he was just like, he was just like too freaking full of himself for me. You know what I mean? So
he was, but he wasn't a bad person.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't.
He wasn't a bad person. He was just completely oblivious to everyone else.
So oblivious. Like, it was so crazy. So as we talk about race and royals, we'd be remiss to not bring up Double M, Meghan Markle, the Duchess.
Duchess of Sussex. I'd love to sit down with Shonda Rhimes and ask her, how did Meghan Markle influence the way you wrote this story? And I don't mean Meghan sat down with her. I mean, like, how did what happened to her? Because there were just so many moments, like being concerned about what the child looked like.
Yo, when he was it born. Was like so many people were catching strays. Like, it was like ridiculous. That one was like, okay, let me get at these royals. Then there's like the whole birthing scene and the breach. We're like, okay, let me get at House of the Dragon. It was like, I was just like, yo, shit, people are just catching strays out here. It's wild.
Yeah, that was that scene. That was just so much. I just felt like it is impossible to watch this and not think about Meghan Markle, yeah. and what could have been if they had just let her, like, be a celebrity, you know? Like, what if they had just let Meghan Markle be part of the royal family without all the drama?
Then King Charles wouldn't be getting booed in the streets and eggs thrown at him. That's what
I mean. He'd still be getting booed, yes. but it wouldn't be.
Possibly. Possibly. Like, who knows?
But it wouldn't be a situation where you have people, instead of talking about his fancy coronation, blah, 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 talking about the fact that Harry was not given a place of honor, that Meghan is, at, you know, in the United States because it's Archie's birthday. Like, they were just, I wonder.
His granddaughter how was much looking of out.
What happened?
Yeah. His granddaughter was looking out the window, looking sad AF. And everybody's like, she's got that Diana stare down. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's wild. Like, it's like, this one is bad for him. You know what I mean? Like, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I just wonder how much Meghan and Harry have been in the press, in the news a lot in the last year. And I just wonder how much what happened to them, how that unfolded, how they reacted to it, their love story that they put out there, like all of that influenced what happened on in the show. Because as far, like, yes, there has always been kind of folks who wondered if Queen Charlotte had some African heritage. It's not, we don't know. But, I mean, the answer is we don't really know. A lot of English historians say it seems unlikely, but it's not impossible. And if you look at paintings of her, you can see that, you could say that she has some African features. That said, this story is fictional, and so they just leaned into it. She's Black. She comes from a Black family where they are their rulers, and no one seems to have a problem with them being Black and ruling in this province in Germany. I just have to wonder how much the reception that she receives when she gets to England, the way that the other ladies in waiting treat her, the way that Princess Augustus treats her, how much that was pulled from maybe some of Meghan Markle's experiences.
Well, because we traffic in conspiracy theories on this show, it probably was very influenced by some of Meghan's experience because of the grand Netflix royal conspiracy. They are trying to get us to love these royals. Like, there's so many royal shows on Netflix.
It's like, it's absurd. It is absurd. It is completely absurd the amount of time and energy that I have spent watching these royal shows, Googling, oh, did this really happen? Feeling empathy for, like, people who are, like, the richest people in the world, or, you know, on the streets of London while all this is happening, there are, like, many, many orphans just trying to get by. But I'm like, oh, no, Charlotte's feelings are hurt. Like, this, it is got to be some kind of conspiracy over at Netflix to make Americans, I mean, I know it's a global company, but I feel like it's an American company. They're trying to make us love these royals.
I don't even understand. That's what we, like, fought for, so we could be free of this. Like, what is this? Is crazy. We're trying to turn us into monarchists. I mean, we got Queen Elizabeth, Prince Philip, Charles, George III. We got freaking Harry and Meghan out here with their Netflix documentary. It's unbelievable. It's like nonstop.
Did you ever think you would feel any kind of empathy for George III?
Not at all. Like, I was literally, like, I always make fun of him, especially since Hamilton. And now I'm like, oh, I'm kind of a dick. Like, I'm kind
of
like,
you've made fun of him on this podcast.
Very much so. I've made fun of George III. Very much so. I feel terrible. Like, they made me feel like, oh, man, that's not really cool, man. Like, don't do that, for sure. And it shows you the strength of, like, the stories they're telling. But, man, are they leaning into this royal thing heavy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sitting here making fun of it. But the truth is, I watch all of them. They're like, here's a trailer where someone's wearing a tiara. And I'm like, I'm in.
Oh my gosh. Didn't they even give us the Romanoffs too? Wasn't it something like Romanoffs? Yeah.
They gave us my that gosh. The Empress, which is a really good show. I really love that one. There's just been, it's a lot. What's going on over there, Netflix?
Listen,
we're
that's
holding
be
on
their...
to our democracy, like, barely over here. So can you help us out?
The monarchy experience is gonna be, they're gonna roll it out. Like, you know, like, it's gonna be what it is. Oh man. Yeah, I mean, one of the things I talking about, like, empathy for characters, and we did just mention George III, and I think it is one of the strengths of this show is the depiction of, in my opinion, their depiction of mental health issues that he's having, not really the depiction of it so much as the fact that it doesn't make him unlovable. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make him like that, that people who have mental health issues are still lovable and still are like able to, you know, have people in their lives that care deeply about them. Obviously there's some troubling shit that they were making that they had him doing to try to like quote unquote fix whatever struggles he was having. But I mean, just the purity of like how Charlotte saw him is a beautiful depiction in this show, I thought.
Yeah, I really love the scene where he says to her, I'm half a man, you have half a husband, half a king. And she responds, but you're just Charles. I'm just sorry, George. You're just George. I got Charles on the brain because of the coronation. you're just George. And like that is, it was so meaningful because too often in film, mental illness, intellectual disabilities as well, become a character's entire identity. Mm-hmm. And I love when stories are like, yes, it's part of who they are. It's a part, just like mm-hmm. any illness or disability would eventually become part of who you are. But in essence, he's still this full person and she sees him as one. That his mental illness is part of that, but it's part of who she loves. It's part, she loves all of it.
Yeah, I agree. I love that part. I love that scene. And she like using his own words, right, to like come back and like, you know, if Farmer King, like King, like you're just George. Like it was beautiful. And I also love the scene that really, really, I was like, geez, man, Shonda Rhimes, one of the classic Shonda Rhimes devices, a person who's just like talking, like written scenes, a person's telling you something, but the other character doesn't let that person off the hook. And they keep pinning down on what the information is that they need to know. And that's the scene where she's like, yeah, okay, I heard everything you said. Do you love me? Mm-hmm. Like, and that was like, if you tell me you don't love me, I'll walk away. And I'll live my life in Buckingham House and make the best of it. And just holding him like to like, okay, you don't get to like squirm away from this. And it's just such a powerful scene. I just love that scene. It was like got to the core of like these two characters really well.
Yeah. It was also a scene that where her motivation for not leaving and not giving all of this up and just walking away became clear to me too. It was like, oh, she really is in this. Like she loves him. She sees the full him and loves him. Not despite it, because that's not, I don't want to put it that way, but she mm-hmm. she's, this is not like a marriage just for status for her. Mm-hmm. This mm-hmm. isn't just like, oh, I get to be the queen. She sees this as a partnership and she wants it to be successful. And she understands that in order for him to be happy, this has to be successful. Yeah. Or at least appear to be successful, right? I think she knows that, like, I think by the end of the season, especially after Reynolds speaks to her and basically says, the king is okay, like, for now, but it's not mm-hmm. going to stop. I think she begins to realize that she's committing to a life that's going to be quite difficult for her. And there was another path open to her, which is she could live separately from him. And they could, you know, meet up and make a couple babies every so often. But she chose the other path, which was probably painful, but also very joyful. They yeah. clearly have a bond that is deep, especially since when she gets this information that her son is expecting a child, she doesn't call back, you know, Lady Bridgerton or Lady Danbury to share the news with them, her friends. She goes straight to George mm-hmm. to tell him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I loved that so much. Yeah, and it was, yeah, it was really, you really get the layers of like it, and it like added so much. I'm almost wanting to go back, and I will, and watch the scene when the king comes in and interrupts like them while in season two?
I think in the middle
of a conversation.
Yeah, I really want to. I'm with you. I want to rewatch actually both seasons now.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it was good. It was. I really loved that, and I loved. I loved seeing Brimsley and Reynolds and their backstory and Brimsley's backstory. I mean, we've only met Reynolds in this season, right? But it was cool to see something that had been missing from Bridgerton, which was a view into what happens to the people who are serving the royals or serving the people who are the lords and ladies of these houses. We see it in Downton, and we definitely get a revised version of that in Gilded Age. But it was nice to see another aspect to the relationship.
Oh, absolutely. It was just nice that Brimsley wasn't just a character for comic relief, right? That's what I thought he was going to be in the beginning when she was like, are you really just going to follow me everywhere? Mm-hmm. I thought, wow, this is just going to be like this annoying character who is entirely there to have witty remarks like Mr. Carson. But his character was more fleshed out than that. And the struggles that Brimsley had, and the struggles that with Reynolds and their relationship and how it was hard for them to navigate their duty with their feelings for each other was a nice addition to the plot, which was already 100%. Super packed, but I never felt myself being like, I don't care about this. I did care about their characters and how in their relationship. I'm curious about what happened to Reynolds.
Yeah, me too. I think we're going to get more information because there's a lot in between now to then. When she says Lady Danbury says to Violet, she goes, theirs is a love story that is she talks about how deep it is, the love story. And I think that's not just for this season. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, there's going to be more. I feel like if this is successful.
I hope so. I mean, I'm a little skeptical because I feel like they might want to do another spinoff, but I want to see, there's some things here that I think they left for the future for sure.
Yeah.
And I think Brimsley and Reynolds are definitely characters that I'd like to see more of because they were interesting characters. Brimsley's very funny. I was really sad in that scene where it was right after, I think it was right after the children had confronted the queen and Brimsley, kind of tells her the truth. Like, you haven't been a very great, you've been a good queen, but you're the queen. Motherhood has not always been your priority. But I was really sad when she had to, she seemed to have asked him for the first time about his life.
Yeah.
And that just makes you realize how over time she became more and more self-obsessed and self-centered.
But I read that differently.
Felt a little besieged, right? She had to keep up this. She had to hold up this whole show by herself.
Yeah. You know what, though? I read that differently a little bit. I read it that she, I almost read it, and maybe I'm reading my own thoughts into this, but I almost read it like she asked Brimsley for some real information and Brimsley gave it to her. You weren't a great mom. We're all here to serve the king. And he framed it in a way that she could, but it still cut her deeply. And I think that she almost asked that question, like, did you ever have a family? Almost to cut Brimsley, knowing that about Reynolds. I felt like she had an inclination.
That's possible. Yeah. I didn't read it that way, but you're right. That could be. Yeah. Cause she can be quite cutting, right?
Yeah. Like, she didn't like feeling what she felt. So she pushed back did you ever have a family? Not because she didn't know that his story, she'd been together with him for years, maybe somewhat self-absorbed, but she legit, I think, was trying to get back at him in that moment.
Mm-hmm. That's possible.
Yeah. So now we're talking about future seasons. we know that season three of Bridgerton, you know, the mothership series is coming back. The timeline 1814 timeline tells us a bit about what we're going to expect in season three. Apparently, Penn and Eloise are like on the out still.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not great. So season three and season in this, sorry, I almost said season four. Season three and Queen Charlotte were filmed at the same time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know that only because the actresses who played Lady Danbury and Violet Bridgerton talked about filming their scenes at the same time that they were filming season three. Wow. So now that we're in the midst of a writer's strike and we stand with the writers.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when it's going to come out. I had assumed that we would see season three this summer, that this was going to be kind of like a primer. But if I'm any streaming service or any network, I'm going to maybe pace my content a little bit better.
Or just cut the deal. Well, or just cut the freaking deal with the union. Like, what is wrong with you? Anyway.
Yes, they could do that. But we'll see. For those of us who've lived through the last writer's strike,
yeah.
Things are going to get interesting.
100%.
It's going to be.
No question.
Oh my God. That was like the worst period of TV. And that was before streaming and before you could like easily access like old TV. It wasn't like we could just be like, oh, let's just, you know, rewatch Law and Order. Like, it was a rough period.
It was rough.
So we'll see how long it goes, but I don't think Netflix has announced when season three is going to be released, but I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm also not clear on which story they're covering, because in the book order, you know, Colin and Penelope's story is not next. And I'm hoping, as I said last year, that Colin and Penelope, that gets resolved for better or worse this season. I cannot do another season of this. Andrea is not interested in another season of Colin being a jerk to Penn. Like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
So the other thing I think we might see in season three is I don't think that this heir to the throne thing is going to go away. I think that, yes, Charlotte is extremely happy that, you know, the prince and his wife are expecting a child. But as I think everybody knows, nothing is sure about expecting a child. The child hasn't been born yet. Yeah. You always, as we've learned from Harry, you always want to have an heir and a spare. So I think we'll see that, you know, maybe Queen Charlotte will be trying to marry off one of her sons, because she's been trying to marry off her nephew for literally two seasons.
Yeah, she has.
So it's maybe she should focus her attention on one of her sons that, you know, just fell out of a brothel or whatever.
Fell straight out. I mean, the collar is ruffled, the hair is disheveled, the sideburns are unkempt. Like, I don't know what's going on with these guys.
They're a mess. Her whole family. I was like shocked when she walked in that room and those were her children. I was like, wait, what?
It's like, crazy because both kids? Of them. Yeah, both of them were so well put together. Like, it's so crazy. Like, I'm like, wow, this is a hot, hot mess. What's going on with these kids?
Yeah, that scene is great. I mean, we've talked about it earlier, but that scene was so solid. But I was just in complete shock. These are your children?
Yeah. I mean, and it should be a plot line, the heir thing that you're talking about too in this next one, because the heir that is like in, you know, in utero is not just the heir, it's the heir. Like it's a big deal. Like, we'll talk about this on the historical thing. Like, what can we talk? Let's talk about some of the historical highlights. I mean, that's Queen Victoria that we're talking about.
Yeah. Queen Victoria. So England has this running thing that they do better under queens. And I gotta say, you look at the two Elizabeths and Victoria, they're not wrong.
Nope.
And Queen Victoria was the longest reigning monarch until Queen Elizabeth, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, Queen Elizabeth
II.
The second. Okay, cool.
I'll look that up really quickly, but I believe that's true. She, you cannot overstate this woman's impact on Europe.
No.
Every royal house of Europe, almost, not every single one, but most of them have one of her descendants, like, on the throne as of even today. But if you go back into when a lot of Europe was still had monarchies, that was the case too. She had an outsized impact on the entire continent, and in addition to that, on the culture of England for decades. I mean, we talk about the Victorian era because most period pieces and novels that people read are from that era, and all of that was influenced by Queen Victoria. So it's just not any baby.
No, exactly.
It's like they ended the series with like, wow, this historical event is about to happen, which is the birth of, one of the most influential queens in history.
And with her saying your line is going to continue, and boy, did it continue. I mean, even up to now, we're having a coronation, and that's like a direct descendant from Queen Victoria and Prince Albert, right? Like, so it's wild, you know what I mean, to see like the way they ended it with that. So I think that's really cool.
So it's, yeah, really, I just looked it up, and the longest reigning monarch was Queen Elizabeth II, and then Victoria, and then George III.
George III. Wow, look at that. You know, you got to do something. You got to be in the record books for something other than losing the colonies. Oh man. And other moments from history. Yes, you know, Charlotte and George were in fact married 6 hours after her arrival to England. That's wild.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
When I was looking for like historical, like what matched up, that was one that shocked me the most. I know it's like a minor detail, but like, I couldn't believe it. She arrived in England and had the wedding the same day.
Yeah. Super wild. It's super, super wild. And she also, you know, in our 1814 timeline, she in fact was the person who brought the practice of decorating Christmas trees.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. She was like, hey, let's happy Christmas.
Which is like such a big thing both in England and America. Like that tradition maybe wouldn't have made it to America without her. So I think it's a small detail, small cultural detail, but it's kind of a big deal because it's a tradition that everyone who celebrates Christmas for the most part participates in.
Yeah, that's wild. And also another detail was that King George did live in Kew while his son was heir, and ruled as Prince Regent later in his life.
Yeah,
as
he was having the last decade of his life, he lived apart from the court in Kew in relative isolation, and his son ruled in his stead, and sometimes fought with his mom a lot. They did not always get on well. I don't think that he was quite the pushover that they made him seem when his brothers were like, he did not approve this. And she was like, you're right. He didn't not approve it.
Yeah, exactly. That was a great scene.
I do think we just want to note a couple of things here that are major, major events. One is that there's two wars that are kind of brewing.
Yeah.
Right? So the first one is the American Revolution, which is not that far off. This is 1761.
America!
George was king through all of that. We mentioned that he is best known for being the king that lost the American colonies. And the other is just what we referenced about Queen Victoria. When the Princess Royal died and her child died with her in childbirth, it set off this series of events that eventually leads to the coronation of Queen Victoria. In her marriage to Prince Albert, And in, 1914, World War I broke out, and most of the monarchs involved in that war were either married to a descendant, one of her children or grandchildren, or were one of her children or grandchildren. So a lot of people refer to that as the Cousins War, because Victoria intentionally had her children and grandchildren marry into these other kingdoms, thinking that it would keep the peace, that, the ties of family would keep people from violence. And instead what happened was this horrible war, the Great War. So while that's 100 years later from this story, it's still worth mentioning that they're kind of laying the groundwork for the next thing for you to watch, which is the young Victoria, or the show Victoria, which I think we've both watched.
Yeah, 100%.
You watched Victoria, right?
Yeah, I watched Victoria.
Yeah,
I loved Victoria.
Yeah, it's a good show. It was good. It's fun. Yeah,
it was good. It was, at the end, they took their foot off the gas a little bit. But in the beginning, it was like, wow, this is really cool. Like,
yeah, the last season I did not enjoy. But the first two seasons are great.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Yeah, so I did love that show. And it's important also that we call out some of these historical things that happen in the show that were inaccurate. Like, so some of those things happened. What were the ones that jumped out to you?
Just a little thing. So the show kicks off with the Princess Royal dying. That's happening too early. She died in 1817. We know that it can't be 1817 yet in the storyline, because they mentioned that Antony and Kate are like just still newlyweds. So they moved it up a little bit to make it fit the plot, and so that they didn't have to do a time jump in regular Bridgerton, but that didn't actually happen when they said it did.
Yeah, and then we got, the Qyburn inspired doctor, Dr. John Monroe. Like he was a real doctor at the time, but he probably did not treat the king, at least not as intensely as it was shown on the show. Although the king did endure treatment for his condition, but we don't know all the specifics of the treatments that were implored.
Yeah. And John Monroe was sort of known as like a leading figure in psychology, but there was no psychology yet, but what was the treatment of mental health issues. But he was also known to be a person who used these very unorthodox techniques that other doctors thought were cruel and brutal, and also didn't see the reason behind them. I think I read a contemporary doctor's critique of his methods, and he was like, if I understood why these methods were being used, then maybe I could approve of them, but they don't seem to make any sense. Mm-hmm. So he was a member of like the royal physicians, but he wasn't the king's physician. That was like a group of physicians that would consult with the crown from time to time. He wasn't like his doctor.
I do love that they set it up though for Charlotte to be like, get out, like bounce. And even the princess was like, she did this? She's like, damn right she did. She got his ass up out of there. I was happy to see the back of him.
Yeah, me too. I also love that George stole his dog.
That was great. The deformed bunny was absolutely adorable.
Like, I thought that was so
cute.
I thought the dog was so cute.
The dog was super cute. I don't know. She was in her feels. She was just feeling some type of way.
What is that?
Yeah. That showed the German in her. She was just like, this is not a dog. This is too small. Like, let's go. Get out of here.
I thought it was so cute. I was like, oh. At least she kept him and kept him around. He was always in his little basket.
She had tons of them after, like, right. in the later timeline, she had tons of dogs. So it was like same kind of dog. And you know what? This one is inaccurate, but probably obvious, but it does bear mentioning that, at no point did the crown say, you know what, all you black people, you should be lords and ladies, and any foreigner will also give you rank. However, there have been black members of the British aristocracy. Most notable is Dido Elizabeth Bell, the daughter of Sir John Lindsay, who was raised by her great uncle and aunt, the Earl and Countess of Mansfield. Despite how other costume dramas and period pieces have erased Black people from depictions of pre-20th century history, there were Black people present on the continent in many countries, including England, France, the Netherlands, Russia, and more notably, the Iberian Peninsula, which is modern-day Spain and Portugal.
Yeah. I just think I'm already ready for people to make a big deal about, you know, I mean, people were already in their feels about Queen Charlotte being depicted by a Black woman, but it really irritates me when people have an issue with this because there were Black people living on the continent. It's like, it's not like Black people just suddenly showed up in Europe in the like 1940s. Like, that's not what happened. So if anyone's interested in learning more about Dido Elizabeth Bell, there's a great movie called Bell about her.
Yeah, maybe we'll do some more content on these period pieces.
Totally. I would love to cover Belle. It's a really good movie. I remember reading a piece in Jezebel when it first came out and by one of the Black writers at Jezebel being like, this is what I've been waiting for, like a period piece where like I can relate to the character on this level, right? Mm-hmm. And now that's common. Right. Yep. It's like Bridgerton, Hamilton, they kind of broke this mold of like, now it is quite common to just find a period piece where one of the main characters at least is Black. Maybe many of the main characters will be Black or Asian or, you know, some race other than white. Non-white is probably the best word. So I love that. This is happening, but Belle was one of the first movies to do it, and it's about a real person, a person who really existed. It's loosely based on her life story. Like, there's a lot of details about her we don't know.
Yeah. Do you think that Disney like is kicking themselves about not keeping Shonda Rhimes around though, with how big this thing is becoming?
I don't think that Disney would have ever. I've thought about this a lot because she just made every time some show comes out of Shonda Rhimes on Netflix, I have that conversation with myself. Wow, like Disney must be real mad at themselves. But then I remember, like, there's no way Disney would have greenlit some of this stuff.
I mean, they're not doing Anna Delvey. Like, they're not doing that.
There's no way that you were going to watch Bridgerton on ABC.
Like, yeah, but you know what though? But Bridgerton could have been on Disney Plus. Bridgerton could have been on Hulu.
Not with the sex, right? So
it's fair.
Yeah, Bridgerton maybe could have been on Hulu, but like it definitely wouldn't have been on Disney Plus because of the first season of Bridgerton got all that interest because of how it treated sex.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I think that she I know she's one of the most brilliant women in Hollywood. So I know she made the right decision. And I think she probably feels pretty good about it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is becoming like with these prequels and spinoffs, it's becoming like its own, you know, mini universe.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
It's like, totally, she's creating like an IP, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I think it has a lot of legs. I actually think there's a lot of potential here for other spinoffs. And there's plenty of Bridgerton books. They're not even close to done with this series.
I agree. No, I agree. I totally agree. And it's all interesting and every story has drawn you in. So, I mean, it's really great. Now, you know, the Duke ain't been out here working too much. Maybe we get the Duke of Hastings. Maybe he comes back. Maybe he realizes he needs to come back here and get in these Bridgerton shows.
So I don't think we'll see him in season 3. I actually don't think we'll ever see him on the show again. However, we will see Anthony and Kate in season 3. We'll see Kate. That has been confirmed. And Kate is one of the people who read the book. She's one of their favorite heroines. So I think she's not going anywhere. Obviously, Lady Danbury and Lady Bridgerton aren't going anywhere. And hopefully we'll have plenty of Queen Charlotte in the future, too.
So we just see Daphne just like popping up without Hastings ever again?
I think that might happen. Yeah. It wouldn't surprise
me. Why don't we just recast
me.
Hastings? Can we just recast Hastings?
Do we need a new Hastings?
I mean, like, eventually there'll need to be a new Duke of Hastings. Maybe we just kill him off. Like, pull a Matt.
Wow, you're just out here murdering the basement. I just want to say for our listeners, I do not endorse this opinion.
I know. Nobody else is gonna endorse this opinion because he was, you know, I'm just like tight that we lost like a major cast member like season two. Like it's kind of wild. I mean, he didn't have much to do in season two.
Anyway. Yeah, and honestly, as the younger kids get older, like as Hyacinth becomes a young woman, like Daphne's role in the family is going to become smaller and smaller and smaller. Because you get,
yeah, she's going to be, it's going to be,
exactly. You know, like that Violet had a job, which was to get her two eldest settled. Now she's moved on to Eloise. Who knows what's going to happen there?
Yeah, that's going to be.
But like by the time we get to the little kids, you know, Daphne's going to have her own family. Like it kind of makes sense for her to fade more into the background.
I agree. And Eloise and her mom have a lot in common. It's so interesting, like, to see, like, young Violet, like, with the way that she, like, was going at her mom about, like, social norms and, like, the education of, like, of people of color being educated just like her dad was. And it gave me real Eloise vibes.
Yeah, like, it's interesting, right? Because I mentioned earlier, seeing young Violet made me think of young Daphne. But now that you mention it, she is very much like Eloise, who she struggles with. Mm-hmm. Maybe because she's so much like her.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Whatever. I don't like Eloise, so yeah. That's a hot take. A lot of people, that's one of their favorite characters, but I'm
never... Just say whatever. I don't like Eloise.
I will stand here in my feelings that she did Penn dirty and should just forgive her and get over it.
Why did she go hard at Penn? Right. We said this when we covered the other one. It just made no... It was just so upsetting that she did that with Penn.
I understand that she was upset that her friend kept this from her, but Eloise, you were a Bridgerton, not a Featherington, so I'm going to need you to fall back and recognize that your friend has a much more difficult position than you do.
Just a hater on the side hustle. She's in society and putting out these pamphlets in her spare time. Run an enterprising whole situation. Anyway, she got the queen shook right now.
She got the queen's needing sorrows,
prayers. Well, that will do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. We have enjoyed covering this episode of Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back. We'll see you soon.
Bye, everyone.